Blog Talk Radio.
This is JJ Bomber. You are listening to Well Armed Radio.
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.
Well, good evening, sheepdogs. Welcome to Well Armed Radio, where freedom is our best friend. Thank you for joining us in our weekly vigorous, relentless, and on occasion ruthless pursuit of freedom. We are broadcasting live from the very well-armed studio in New Berlin, Wisconsin. It's my pleasure to speak with the most informed gun owners in the state. That would be you guys. You are your community's finest. With a face for radio and a voice for silent movies, my name is Nick Clark. I'm the president of Wisconsin Carry and the host of Well Armed Radio. And encourage you to be part of the show with your calls, ideas, questions, comments, criticism, participation. You can call the show live here at 563-999-3787. Again, the live number, 563-999-3787. Start the show with the usual warning, no sacred cows here. So here's what we got coming up tonight. I'm going to talk about the Nicholson versus Clefishy. I call her Clefishy. I am not a Rebecca Clefish fan, obviously. So I'm going to talk about that. Then I'm going to talk about the just an observation I made the other day watching Court TV about Democrats and I mean, things we already knew, but just an angle on it. And that being the Democrats would sacrifice innocence for their cause. And I'll explain what I mean there. And then if we have time, I'll talk about hopefully we'll get to this, the gun bills that the Wisconsin legislature is moving forward and my thoughts on those. And then we'll see what else. I have a couple other little, little topics that we might get to here tonight. But to start with, you know, it's funny because ever since the formal Republican Party in Wisconsin really frustrates me. It frustrates me on a number of levels because one, I guess it started with just getting flat out lied to by Scott Walker and his team during the primary election between Mark Newman and Scott Walker back in 2010, I suppose that was. I reached out to both, you know, Wisconsin Carry wanted to push for constitutional carry and contacted both Walker's campaign and Newman's campaign and asked them if they I tried to figure out how to phrase it. I didn't think that they'd go out there and champion constitutional carry, but I said to each, hey, you know, if we can get constitutional carry to your desk, will you sign it? And they both said yes. Mark Newman said it. I was talking on the phone with Mark Newman and he said yes. And for Scott Walker, I was on the phone with his, at the time, I guess it was his campaign manager, Keith Gilks, who later became his chief of staff. And then I think Keith Gilks later became started some kind of consulting firm for political candidates. Anyway, it was a campaign consulting firm. But we all know what happened. We got constitutional carry to the floor of the Senate. Scott Walker goes on TV and says that anything that makes it to my desk must have mandatory training and a permit. If I have to have mandatory training to ride my Harley, you should have training to, I mean, again, that's Scott Walker 2010 when he threw constitution. That would have actually been 2011. He was the campaign was 2010. 2011 is when he threw constitutional carry under the bus. As soon as Scott Walker threw constitutional carry under the bus, then Milwaukee Talk Radio, with the exception of Vicki McKenna, threw constitutional carry under the bus. Jay Weber, Mark Belling, Charlie Sykes at the time, who was a talk show host on WTMJ, threw constitutional carry under the bus. And then, then it was dead. And that's not just me saying it. That's Darren Lasort, who is the NRA liaison for Wisconsin. He's done interviews and he's said that nothing, this was a quote from Don't Kill the Messenger. You know, other people have tried to when I've shared this, but this is Darren Lasort from the NRA speaking. He said nothing did more to harm or to kill constitutional carry than Milwaukee Talk Radio. And he said once they came out against it, the legislators in Madison were just running for the hills back in 2011. So anyway, so that started my baptism by fire of getting lied to by Republicans. Then in 2013, we were working with Joel Klefisch, coincidentally, Rebecca Klefisch's husband, trying to get the constitutional carry. Well, excuse me, that was school grounds carry, trying to get school grounds carry passed. And had it in committee the night before the committee vote. I had a news crew at my house, and then I got a call from Joel Klefisch himself saying, hey, Nick, sorry, never had this happen before, but my bill is getting pulled from the committee calendar. It's not going to be voted on for tomorrow. So, again, that was 2013, at the time he said that it was leadership. Robin Voss and Scott Walker didn't want that bill, the school grounds carry bill. So various other times there's been other legislators pushing stuff through, and it's been Republicans that stymied us at every turn. And then, you know, you look at that, obviously the whole Trump campaign, the whole Trump election, Trump presidency exposed the Republican establishment machine, which is the reason why we conservatives can't have nice things. So I have a great deal of disdain for the Republican establishment, but it got really bad back in 2018, I believe it was, when when Kevin Nicholson was running for the Senate with against in the primary against Leah Vukmir. Now, I have all has for the course of the past, you know, I don't know, 20 years, donated quite a bit of money. I got, I don't know, let's see, when did I start? 2002 probably was. Yeah, I mean, I've probably been making, probably 20 years I've been donating to political campaigns. And 20, I certainly donated to the Wisconsin Republican Party. I was a card-carrying member of the Wisconsin GOP, and also the National Party, and that was right around the George W. Bush era. And then with the Patriot Act, some other things, George W. Bush kind of soured my opinion, and I you know, had a stint as a libertarian, experimented as a libertarian for, I don't know, 6 years or 5 years. Still tended to vote Republican in most things, but was a card-carrying, dues-paying member of the Libertarian Party until I came to my senses there and realized that libertarians only have a plan to spoil, not a plan to win. But that's what happens. Some people get really disenchanted with the Republican Party, and so they go join the Libertarian Party. You know, I understand that. I mean, I joined the Libertarian Party at one time, but then you realize real quickly the Libertarian Party is just, they put party over principle worse than anybody else. I mean, they, I've talked about this before. In fact, I even wrote a white paper on it and provided it to the Libertarian Party of what they could do to actually advance freedom. But the Libertarian Party is not interested in that. They want their own little sandbox, and they want their own little little red ball. And so again, just more interested, more interest from the Libertarian Party in spoiling than they are in advocating for freedom. So I returned to being a Republican voter, call myself a conservative, never rejoined the Republican Party. As far as in Wisconsin, we have open, open primaries, open elections. So you don't have to be a party member, but it's just been my observation that the reason we can't have nice things is Republicans, and it's squishy Republicans. And the gun issue is definitely one of them where this is really put on full display, but there's other issues as well where it's because of Republicans that we can't have nice things. And a bunch of reasons for that. I mean, Republicans, they sit there and worship the Marquette University Law School poll, which does not represent public sentiment. They just not principled folks. They're not willing to let freedom prove to let conservative policies prove the concept of conservatism and let that drive your grassroots support from the electorate. But anyway. So then 2018, Nicholson and Clefish are running in the Republican primary. And again, I used to donate to the Republican Party. And then Clefish, because she's the party insider, she secures the, I forget like at convention what it was, if it was like she needed to have 75% of the vote of the delegates at the Wisconsin Republican convention, or if it was two-thirds, if it was, I don't remember what the standard was. But anyway, Clefish manages to secure in the Republican primary, two-thirds of the delegates at the state GOP convention. And so then the Wisconsin GOP, what that meant was the Wisconsin GOP was going to formally endorse and formally support Leah Vukmir's campaign. So here you have in 2018 a Republican primary, and I've donated to the Republican Party, and now my money that I donated to the Republican Party is going to support Leah Vukmir, to support Leah Vukmir's campaign. That's bullshit. That's as terrible as a thing you could possibly do to your supporting membership. And so I've never donated to the Republican Party since then. I donate directly to candidates and only the candidates that I want to support. Donate directly. In fact, I get calls all the time because I'm was a big donor. And I say big donor, I mean, not like a Dick Uline or like a, who's the Beloit? Who's the old 70-year-old billionaire from Beloit? Diane Henricks. Not anything like that. You hear about these people maxing out their donation amounts to a candidate. I don't donate that much, but frequently $250, $500 for a candidate, you know, once a year, twice a year type thing. So, so now I've since the Republican senatorial committee, the RSC calls, they want money. I tell them no. The Wisconsin GOP calls, they want money. I tell them no. I said, I only donate. And I tell them why. I said, after you guys used my money against me in 2018, I will never donate to the Republican Party again. I give my money directly to candidates. And that's what I've done. Donated to Marjorie Taylor Greene. You know, so that's what I do, is I don't donate directly to candidates. But it just really irritated me, plus to watch talk radio. In 2018, talk radio just smeared the hell out of Kevin Nicholson. You know, Kevin Nicholson, I think, would have had a much better chance of winning that election than Leah Vukmir did. I'm not going to relitigate that, but I went through at the time my detailed reasons for why I was supporting Kevin Nicholson over Leah Vukmir. But it really left a bad – I stopped listening to talk radio for about 18 months because I was so irritated, so frustrated and again, disenchanted. I've now used that word twice tonight. So disenchanted with their support for and especially after Trump had just been elected and was in midterm of his presidency, proving how much success someone who's not beholden to the establishment could bring to this country. And so here we have people in Wisconsin doing the same old fucking thing, going to get the same old fucking results that they have in the past by supporting these establishment Republicans. And Reince Priebus goes on, you know, Mark Belling's show and says how he's supporting, 100% Leah Vukmir. You know, I'm trying to do my Reince Priebus voice. You know, I really like the matchup, you know, woman and woman, Leah Vukmir against Tammy Baldwin back in 2018. Or excuse me, this was still the primary, but he would like to see Leah Vukmir match up against Tammy Baldwin, somehow thinking that, you know, woman against woman is going to be a better opportunity for the Republicans to win than if Kevin Nicholson was going against. And it was just, there was no basis in reality, no basis in logic. Leah Vukmir was just an establishment creature. She was the next in line for the Republican insiders. And, you know, so Kevin Nicholson won 55 of, I think Wisconsin has 72 counties. Kevin Nicholson won 55 of them, but he didn't win Southeast Wisconsin because of, I think, talk radio. And I'm listening to talk radio and they're sitting here saying, oh, well, in college he was a Democrat, which was true, as was, you know, tons, as was Ronald Reagan, as was, you know, Vicki McKenna has said on her show, she was an avowed Marxist when she was in college. But so just the smear against Kevin Nicholson really irritated me. And then people calling, look, Dick Uihlein is one of the most conservative, heavy hitter donors for the Republican Party nationally and otherwise. Great guy. I've been invited to speak at Uihlein for one of their lunch and learns for their employees. They run an amazing company, amazing operation. And I don't know if Dick Uihlein's him and Liz are billionaires. I think so. They live in Illinois, so they never show up on the Wisconsin list of billionaires. Their company's here in Wisconsin, but they live in Illinois. I think they live in Lake Forest. So they, when I used to subscribe to Forbes before I canceled my subscription, cause they went full Trump bashing. I used to like to, keep up on, you know, so I don't know if the Uihlein's are billionaires, but they're mega millionaires. Donated huge money to Wisconsin Carry. I don't want to say how much, but the Uihlein's probably were the largest single donation that Wisconsin Carry's ever received, came from the Uihlein's. So they're good people. And you talk to their employees at down at Uihlein when I went there for lunch and learn, every single person there loves their job. I got a nice little tour of the facility before, and this is before they had added they've since increased their footprint down there in Pleasant Prairie significantly. I want to say it was maybe 2013, 2012, maybe when I gave my presentation down there at Uihlein, 2012, 2013, something like that. And so just really good people. But then back during the Vukmir Nicholson primary, people were bashing Dick Uihlein, saying, oh, how, you know, We don't even know that Dick Uihlein's a conservative. I'm like, are you kidding me? And Milwaukee Talk Radio, just some of this was callers to talk radio, WISN, saying it. But then the hosts weren't, you know, Mark Belling was even, you know, and you could just tell that the host, Mark Belling, Dan O'Donnell at the time, I think, was just a fill-in host, but he used to be the biggest brown noser. I mean, he used to stick his nose so far up Leah Vukmir's butt that he could Eskimo kiss her ovaries. And just that, there was just a lot of establishment worshiping going on. And Leah Vukmir, and it was, again, these Wisconsin Republicans doing the same thing they've done for years, just finding their little comfort with the party choice and letting the party dictate in the primary who your candidate was going to be. And it was really unfortunate, because that was really an opportunity to, I think, Kevin Nicholson had much more broad appeal in the general election than Leah Vukmir did. Leah Vukmir got trounced in the general election, lost even worse than Scott Walker did. Scott Walker lost by like 20,000 votes, and Leah Vukmir lost by like way, way, way more than that. She was just a huge drag, I think a drag on the ticket. And I think with Kevin Nicholson in the race, if he'd have been the general, I think that it might have been a different outcome. And honestly, I think it might have made a difference for the governor's race. I think it might have made a difference for Scott Walker. But all the Republican, you know, party insiders from Scott Walker on down, they all threw their support behind Leah Vukmir. So that was just super frustrating to see what they did to Kevin Nicholson, how they badmouthed him, because it was unfounded. You know, and so now we've got Nicholson versus Clefish. So Kevin Nicholson up against another female establishment, I won't say rhino, I won't call Clefish a rhino, female Republican establishment darling here in Wisconsin. And so Kevin Nicholson, I've been getting, you know, he's calling around to his key supporters, which I'm one of. Because I endorsed him in the primary. I'm not as Wisconsin Kerry president as Wisconsin Kerry doesn't make endorsements, but me as Wisconsin Kerry president on a personal, I made a personal endorsement of Kevin Nicholson back in the Senate primary. And so now Kevin has been telling, you know, his key supporters for the past 6 months, he's been saying that, look, if Ron Johnson doesn't run for re-election, I'm going to run for U.S. Senate. If Ron Johnson does run for re-election, I'm going to run for governor. Now, everybody is trying to make this out to be some big, terrible thing. Like, oh, Nicholson really wanted to run for Senate. But, you know, so now running for governor is an afterthought. And it's one of these illogical isn't the word, but it's one of these inconsequential things. The same thing, like, so on talk radio, Dan O'Donnell was interviewing Ron Johnson when he declared that he was going to run again. And he's like grilling him about his breaking his two-term pledge. And it's like, Dan, no one gives a shit. Republicans don't give a shit that Ron Johnson is breaking his two-term pledge, but he spends half the interview grilling him on that, which is exactly what the liberals, what the Democrats would love you to do, you know, grill. So Republicans it frustrates me that Republicans don't know how to keep their eye on the prize, even in talk radio, don't know how to keep your eye on the prize, don't know how to play offense. They tend to get into the same kind of, they let the liberal media dictate how they approach issues. And so you're always playing into the Democrats' hands. You're always playing, the Democrats always have the field position, to make a sports analogy. You're always playing on their side of the field. And so this notion, Dan O'Donnell saying, I'm going to ask them tough Ron Johnson tough questions. I'm going to ask Republicans tough questions. His audience doesn't need, the conservative audience doesn't want tough questions of Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson is a ball buster fighter Republican. I'll tell you who the Republicans with Republican audience, the listeners of WISN would like, is tough questions of Robin Voss, tough questions to Rebecca Clefishy, you know. But Rojo, who's running unopposed in the primary, Republicans don't want, that's not what they're looking for from their talk radio host, tough questions of Ron Johnson. And so I think Dan, just in this notion that, like, to be Because a lot of libs listen to Dan's show. And I think that's what it was. I think he was just puffing up for the libs to listen to his show. Oh, I'm going to be tough. I'm Dan O'Donnell. I'm going to be tough on Republicans too. Again, just to grandstand out for the libs that listen to his show, from the liberals in the media that listen to his show. I'm trying to sanctimoniously portray himself as some tough, fair questioner, unbiased type, you know. But I use Rush Limbaugh as an example, as the gold standard. Like Rush Limbaugh, when Donald Trump was running in the primary, I kind of got the feeling that Rush Limbaugh was a bit of a Ted Cruz fan. You know, Sean Hannity was totally in the tank for Trump from the word go. But the fact that Rush Limbaugh, he never criticized Trump. He never took a position. It was a primary election. He always took the angle of explaining Donald Trump to people. He always took the angle of sharing a perspective on Donald Trump that other people didn't know. Not, I shouldn't say didn't share, didn't know. He never took never picked a side, you know, Donald Trump, and there was others in the primary, but, you know, never picked a side as far as, you know, you never really knew if he was for Trump or if he was for Ted Cruz. And I remember when Ted Cruz dropped out of the race, Rush Limbaugh had made a comment on his show that he was, watching TV and he was a little melancholy when a friend of his called and made some snarky comment. And so I kind of got the feeling that Rush Limbaugh was a bit of a Ted Cruz supporter, back during that primary. But Rush Limbaugh he took the opportunity to express a point of view that his audience, and that's why people like listening to Rush Limbaugh, because he would, on one level, he would express a point of view that they shared that they didn't hear elsewhere in the media. That was one of the reasons that people liked Rush Limbaugh, that's why the term ditto head came up. Rush would say something, you'd be like, ditto, because you feel the exact same way. But no one else in media would share that. So Rush Limbaugh would share a perspective that Rush's audience shared, and that perspective wasn't shared by anybody else in the media. But the second thing was he would be able to articulate what his audience felt, but wasn't able to actually create the cogent arguments, create the cogent statements and summary and description and essentially. Conservatives would feel like something was right, but maybe they couldn't quite put the logical, you know, fact-based, debated, you know, documented, footnoted version together to explain. And Rush Limbaugh could. So one, Rush Limbaugh would say things that his audience believed, and he was the only person saying that. But the other thing was he could put into words what his audience was feeling, but maybe hadn't been able to quite express. Conservatives have a very strong moral compass, a very strong sense of right and wrong, and what's right and what's wrong. So sometimes they know something's wrong, but they can't quite articulate why. And Rush Limbaugh was able to take what that belief, that feeling that his audience shared, and put a logical, rational explanation around it, so that his audience's feelings turned into factual, articulated arguments on a particular issue. So when I see Wisconsin, when I see conservative talk radio here in Wisconsin, trying to, in the 2018 campaign, influence the campaign, it was really annoying. And then as far as beyond annoying. And then as far as now, like Dan O'Donnell, it seems like he takes it upon himself to be the fact checker, the truth-o-meter, the referee of this primary. And he's out there telling what he does want, what he doesn't want to happen in this primary. And it's like Rush Limbaugh never went on in a Republican primary and said what he did or didn't want to happen. I don't want to see a bloodbath. He just explained the candidates' positions to the voters without spin, without lies, without the liberal media, with the angles that the liberal media wouldn't put out there. And so So now Ron Johnson declares that he's going to run for Senate, which is good because Ron Johnson, we need to hold that Senate seat. And then, and Ron Johnson is truly a fighter. Like Ron Johnson is the, I mean, I, Ron Johnson, Rand Paul, usually Ted Cruz, although every once in a while Ted Cruz pisses me off, but you know, the Ron Johnsons, the Rand Pauls, like as far as senators go, maybe Josh Hawley from Missouri, like they're real ball busters. They're real freedom fighters. You know, I don't know if anybody's doing as much as Ron Johnson is as far as trying to bust up the propaganda machine when it comes to coronavirus and corona, coronanoia and all these censorship lies, hiding of the truth, scuttling of information that's been going on in the DC bureaucracy since coronavirus started. So Ron Johnson declares he's going to run for re-election, and then Kevin Nicholson comes out and says he's going to run for governor. And now everybody's making it seem like, oh, that's such a terrible thing. Oh, Kevin Nicholson really wanted to run for Senate, and the Wisconsin governor is his second choice and afterthought. And I just, the whole he wanted to run for Senate thing, it's such one-sided thinking, and it's such pejorative thinking. And for Republicans to sit there and on talk radio spend their time making an issue of that, it just makes me want to punch the radio. Because I don't know what Kevin really wanted to run for or not. It's clear that Kevin wants to get into politics. It's clear that Kevin wants to make a difference and thinks that he can make a difference. And so instead of these Republicans sitting here thinking that they're all, you know, putting on great radio by grilling Kevin about why he wanted to run, and then portraying it like that's what this race is going to come down to. Rebecca Clefish, is she or isn't she the establishment? And Kevin Nicholson, is he or isn't he? You know, did he really want to run for Senate versus? I mean, it's like these pundits are trying to lay the ground rules for this primary with their opinions. And that's just, it's so frustrating. Like, let the damn thing play out. I don't think, honestly, I don't think, except for Leah Vukmir, except for Rebecca Clefish supporters, of course, yeah, they're going to look for things to snark on Kevin Nicholson about, but other people who, do I really think other people are preoccupied with that? No, I think that they're getting the idea planted in their head that they're preoccupied with, did Kevin really want to run for Senate and governor was an afterthought? Is he really committed to running for governor? Because that's the context that talk radio is putting it in. So I want to share a different perspective. When you hear people say, Kevin really wanted to run for Senate, that's why he was rating for Ron Johnson, as if it's some kind of negative, pejorative thing. What if? Because here's my thing. I think Kevin Nicholson would rather run for governor. I think governor is probably the position that Nicholson really wanted. But think about it. Okay, so I'd rather be a governor than a senator. But if Ron Johnson, look at big picture, if Ron Johnson wouldn't have run for re-election, we would have needed Kevin to run for the Senate again to try to pick up that, to try to hold that seat. But Ron Johnson is running again, and that's a good thing because Ron Johnson is in the strongest position to hold that seat, and Ron Johnson is a ballbuster fighter Republican in D.C. So people are buying into the whole Clefishy establishment spin on this whole Kevin Nicholson. I think Kevin was doing the right thing for the big picture. By, if you believe that the establishment is the problem, look, I honestly think if Ron Johnson was the kind of weak-kneed establishment Republican like some other states have, Kevin Nicholson might have even tried to primary him if there was some dissatisfaction with Ron Johnson in Wisconsin. But Ron Johnson is a freedom fighter. Ron Johnson is one of the non-establishment ballbusters in D.C. from a Republican standpoint. So I think Kevin was doing the right thing by waiting to see if Ron Johnson ran, because people want to assume that Kevin really wanted to run for Senate. But what if Kevin really wanted to see Wisconsin retain the Senate seat, but would rather have run for governor? But he was waiting because if Ron Johnson didn't run for reelection, some loser like Tommy Thompson probably would have run and lost. So it's all a matter of perspective and how people look at what perspective people look at it from. I'd much rather be a governor than a senator. Governor is a much more powerful position. Governor is in a much better position to make a difference than the Senate. Senate, you're one of 100. Governor, you're one of 50. Senate is just a legislator. Governor is like CEO, your executive. And honestly, if Kevin has higher office aspirations, governor is a much better resume to run for president than Senate is. It's a historical fact that senators used to do terrible running for president until Obama and Biden, and we all know Biden wasn't really elected. But if Ron Johnson didn't run for reelection, the best candidate to save that seat from going Democrat would have been Kevin. I think Kevin was making a calculated choice of what was best for advancing freedom. This was the best outcome. If Kevin had committed to run for governor early on, and then Ron Johnson doesn't run, we'd all be like, fuck, who's going to be able to retain that Senate seat? So I'm thrilled with this outcome. Ron Johnson is a fighter. He's kicking ass in D.C., and he's going to run for reelection. Good. Cleefish is a Walker understudy, longtime establishment, farm team, kiss every Wisconsin GOP ass on the way up, typical politician. So again, I wouldn't call Leah Vukmir a rhino, but I will call her as beholden to the people who have fucked us over the past 10 years as a candidate could be. And Kevin is not. And then, you know, someone, I made this post on MeWe about Cleefish versus Nicholson. Someone on MeWe said they worry that Cleefish, it's not that they are so concerned that Kevin considered running for Senate versus governor, but they worry that Cleefish is going to be able to use it against him as an issue, which I can say, look, Cleefish can only use this against Kevin. This Cleefish saying, and if Cleefish wants to distract from actual issues, there isn't anything more specious and inconsequential than, oh, Kevin really wanted to run for governor, nee, nee, or really wanted to run for Senate, nee, 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 you know, he's not really. That's just that pathetic high school drama. That's not an issue. An issue is, why don't we have freedom-fighting Republicans in Madison? That's the issue. That's what we should be talking about. Instead of Dan O'Donnell on his show talking about Kevin Nicholson, did you really want to run for Senate? We should be talking about what's going on in Wisconsin that we can't fix, even though we've got Republicans all over the legislature. And I can give you some specific examples. Things that Dan O'Donnell should be talking about. Yeah, we don't have a Republican governor, but why didn't the legislature step in sooner during the lockdown stuff to end Tony Evers' emergency dictates? Because they had the power to do it, and they wouldn't do it. I mean, there's a whole bunch of things that the legislature could have done, but they didn't do, and that's what we should be talking about, how these candidates who are now running for governor, because Kevin's running for governor. That's a done deal. He's running for governor. So here we are, instead of talking about why he's running for governor, which is a distraction from the issues, even though Dan O'Donnell thinks that's tough questioning and that's what Cleefish is going to throw at him and that's what this race is going to center around. No, it's going to center around that if you make it center around that. It shouldn't center around that. So let's talk about something else. Let's talk about the issues. So again, someone said on MeWe, they worry that Cleefish is going to use it against Kevin as an issue, and she can only use it as an issue against Kevin in the primary, and then only if conservative talk radio is going to be complicit in shilling for Rebecca Cleefishy. Because honestly, you know, the people listening to me right now, you and I, we are not the swing vote in the Republican primary. I'm not talking about general elections. We're talking about Republican primary. The non-politically engaged but freedom-minded conservatives are the swing vote. They aren't paying a bit of attention to the election until commercials start running on TV. The primary election for Wisconsin governor, the Republican primary, will be in August, the general election then November. So this whole Kevin wanted to run for Senate thing, this whole Kevin really wanted to be a senator bullshit, it's going to be long gone by August. And honestly, here's the thing. If you want to talk about like baggage, like the negatives that each candidate's going to have to deal with, to overcome, And if Kevin's negative is that he really wanted to run for Senate. Honestly, I think Rebecca Clefish, she has way, way more baggage than Kevin. Clefish's baggage, even among loyal, engaged Republicans across the state, is Robin freaking Voss. Robin Voss is hated. I mean hated by Republicans. Robin Voss, I mean, let's go back. Robin Voss, remember when Andre Jacques, okay, Scott Walker, Act 10 was Scott Walker's one trick, you know, pony. There was supposed to be an Act 10 Part 2, which involved like law enforcement and police and fire. But then remember Scott Walker called right to work a distraction and prevailing wage reform a distraction. Andre Jacques, a legislator who is, I think, the head of the committee, he's the one that had to move. Andre Jacques at the time was a representative in the assembly. And Andre Jacques was the one that had to buck Voss and move forward again. I think it was the prevailing wage reform bill, even though Robin Voss did not want prevailing wage moving forward. Andre Jacques, in his committee, moved it forward, passed it out of his committee, and Robin Voss was pissed, and I forget if it was right away or the next legislative session, he rescinded Andre Jacques' chairmanship of the committee as punishment because Andre Jacques moved forward prevailing wage. A Republican, Robin Voss, penalized Andre Jacques for moving prevailing wage reform forward, which was a super conservative thing to do. Scott Walker didn't want right to work, said it was a distraction. They weren't advocating for that either. And it was the legislators that had to push those forward. Now look what Robin Voss just did to Tim Rantham. He took his one staffer, Tim Rantham, who's I forget if he's Fond du Lac area or somewhere north of Milwaukee, south of Green Bay, Tim Rantham's district, assembly rep. Well, of course, back up to Andre Jacques. Then Andre Jacques was so frustrated in the assembly, he turned around and ran for Senate and won. Andre Jacques is now a Wisconsin senator. He was in the assembly. But now look what Robin Voss did to Tim Rantham. He took away his one staffer because Tim Rantham, there's rumors going around of what it was really about, but Tim Rantham's made comments that perhaps introducing a bill that would declare that Wisconsin's electoral votes for Biden are rescinded. Or there was also something that Rantham said that Robin Voss supported drop boxes, and so that was the reason Robin Voss. But either way, whatever the reason was, Robin Voss is now punishing Tim Rantham. So back to Robin Voss. Sheriff Clark hates Robin Voss. Mark Belling excoriates Robin Voss on his show. Republicans outstate are sick of the tyrant that Robin Voss is. So Rebecca Clefish's establishment shackles are so much heavier than Kevin's decision process of whether to run for Senate or governor. Rebecca Clefish is the ultimate Stepford candidate. So when people sit here and they want to make this this drama fest about, Kevin Nicholson really wanted to run for Senate. Kevin Nicholson, what if you took it in the perspective of Kevin Nicholson wanted to make the biggest difference he could? And he wasn't going to challenge Ron Johnson because Ron Johnson is a freedom-fighting Republican, but he was going to try to it would be better to have maintained – look, the Wisconsin governor's race is the Republicans to lose. So if Clefish was – and again, people just – even Dan O'Donnell's like on his show, Dan O'Donnell's like, oh, yeah, you know, the irony here is that if Ron Johnson had decided not to run for reelection and Kevin Nicholson had run for reelection, he'd be seeking the endorsement of Robin Voss, who he's now attacking. He'd be seeking the endorsement of Paul Farrow, the chairman of the Wisconsin Republican Party, who he's now attacking. Well, duh. I mean, you fight the battles you have to fight to advance freedom, and you fight the battles that are best to advance freedom. If we need to, I think all of us would agree it's really important to maintain that Senate seat. And so, yeah, if I think that Kevin's calculus was, if Ron Johnson doesn't run for reelection, I'm the best person to retain that seat as a Republican. But since Ron Johnson is running for reelection, I'm a more conservative, I can do a better job as governor than Rebecca Clefish, so yeah, I'm going to run for governor. And here's the thing, you're long-time establishment Republicans that have been, you know, they were a school board member, then they ran for assembly, then they got elected to the assembly, then they waited their turn till the senator from the district wasn't running for reelection, and then what it is the most senior, I think every Senate district has like four assembly districts, maybe it's like two or three, but anyway. So there's multiple assembly districts in every Senate district. So how it works is when the senator in a particular district decides he or she's not going to run for reelection, then the protocol, the courtesy, the hierarchy would say that the longest serving Republican in one of the assembly districts within that Senate district, it's quote their turn to run for Senate. And, you know, someone might challenge, but that's generally how the, you know, and everybody else steps aside and clears the plate. Well, hey, sorry, Nicholson isn't stepping aside for Rebecca Clefishy, who's been wanting to run for governor for 2 years now or more, you know, setting her stuff up. Do you guys realize that the reason that the Republican GOP party didn't get behind the recall Evers effort is because Rebecca Clefish wasn't prepared to run, hadn't raised money, hadn't, you know, she wasn't in a position of being ready to run? Because I think we could have very likely had Tony Evers out in a recall election. But the formal Republican Party did not support the Governor Evers recall. And that was started after all the lockdowns and all the emergency executive orders and all the other crap. So Rebecca Clefish, so the things that matter to advancing freedom in Wisconsin are not whether or not Kevin Nicholson wanted to really run for Senate or really run for governor. I honestly think Kevin Nicholson has young children. I think governor was the thing that he would have rather run for the most. People assume that because he ran for Senate back in U.S. Senate back in 2018, that he really wanted to be a senator. No, I think in 2018, Scott Walker was running for reelection. You're not going to run against Scott Walker. Kevin Nicholson sees what's happening in his country, sees that Trump, an outsider, did well. Kevin Nicholson's a businessman. And he's like, hey, it's the time I want to get in politics and make a difference. I'm not going to sit there and spend 20 years going up through the chain. I'm not going to sit there and, because here's the thing, if Kevin Nicholson, and some people are like, see, I don't understand why Kevin Nicholson didn't start with a lower office. And it's like, you idiot. I hear a Republican calling into talk radio saying that. And it's like, you idiot. If Kevin Nicholson had started with a lower office and worked his way up, he'd be the same establishment beholden cuck that Rebecca Clefish is. You don't want Kevin to have been in the assembly for two terms and then ran for Senate and got the Senate and sat there for two terms. And okay, now he's going to run for governor. No, you don't. Because if he had done that, he would be beholden to the establishment just like Rebecca Clefish is. And you can't say for sure. I mean, maybe there's some people who do come up through the ranks, but they maintain being very independent minded. But it's the exception, not the rule. I think the governor is a much more attractive position for Kevin. And so these people that want to make it a negative, oh, he really wanted to run for Senate. No, it's just that I think Kevin Nicholson decided he wanted to get into politics. He wanted to make a difference. He's been very successful in the private sector in business. And he, served his country in the Marines. He's very passionate about serving the country, very passionate about freedom, combat veteran. And he wants to make a difference, and he's not going to sit there and play the political games for 20 years to get in a position where he can really be make a big impact, just like Ron Johnson held no lower offices before. And look what an awesome Senator Ron Johnson's been. Donald Trump never held public office before, and look what an incredible president he was. Kevin Nicholson, if people would get past, first off, this non-issue of what he really wanted to run for and look at the here and now, this is what's happening. I think if they thought about it, they'd realize that Kevin made a very smart decision-making process. If you think the best of Kevin, not the worst of him, you would realize, yeah, he's where can he make the biggest difference? Where is he needed as the biggest difference? And if Ron Johnson, who's a really good ballbuster fighter, runs for reelection, the best place for Kevin to make a difference is at the state level, because Rebecca Clefa, she is completely beholden to the establishment. And if you have any question about that, look at what Robin Voss just said. He told Kevin last week or 2 weeks ago, don't get into the race. I mean, Robin Voss, again, trying to dictate. Here's the thing. Robin Voss is currently the most powerful Republican, elected Republican in Wisconsin. He's the most powerful Republican in Wisconsin. If Rebecca Clefish gets elected, the most powerful elected Republican in Wisconsin will be Robin Voss. If Kevin Nicholson gets elected, it will not be – Robin Voss will not be the most powerful Republican in the state. Sure, Rebecca Clefish will be governor, but she is an establishment creation. She came up through the establishment farm team. She will not, mark my words, she will not buck the people that have been supporting her for 15 years, 20 years throughout her legislative career, lieutenant governor career. She will not buck them, because that's her base of support. You want someone independent who's willing to do what's right for Wisconsin, let freedom win. Kevin's your guy. I'm telling you, Kevin's your guy. But don't vote for him because I said to. But ignore this stupid, do not fall for the trap of listening to this stupid conservative talk radio line of, oh, he really wanted to run for governor or for Senate. No, honestly, I think he's got young kids. He'd much rather be here in Wisconsin than in D.C. I think he's thrilled that Ron Johnson decided to run for reelection, because that makes running for governor not only the position that he wanted, but the position that he could be the most impactful at. So anyway, we'll be talking more about, I guarantee this is going to be a frequent conversation here on the show, of the primary between Clefish, because what really matters to us, again, I can't stress this enough. What really matters is not what Kevin really wanted to run for. What really matters is why the fuck Republicans in Wisconsin, who have a ton of power, we had all the power when Scott Walker was governor, and why for the second half of Walker's first term and all of Walker's second term, did we not get much conservative stuff done? And the stuff that did get done came from some conservative legislators who had to buck their own party to get it done. Prevailing wage reform, right to work, and a whole bunch of stuff that we couldn't get done. Even though we had all the school grounds carry, constitutional carry, even though we had a Republican governor, Republican Senate, Republican Assembly, which is going to take me to one of my next topics when I talk about, I'll just do this one right now. We've got, there's a story on Spectrum News 1 here in Milwaukee, but it's been in other places. I just happened to pick up from here, and I'm going to, The headline here was Assembly OKs GOP authored bills expanding gun rights. I'm going to read a little bit of this. This is by the Associated Press Madison. And again, it was on Spectrum News 1 that picked it up off the wire services. The Wisconsin Assembly approved a package of Republican authored bills on Thursday that would dramatically expand gun rights in the state, moving forward with the proposals, even though Democratic Governor Tony Evers will almost certainly veto them. Now, just that first sentence, I want to start talking about the spin in here. Tony Evers is not Democratic Governor Tony Evers. He's Democrat Governor Tony Evers. Just putting that in there, Democratic Governor Tony Evers, that is spin. That is bias in these articles just from the word go. And you think, no, Tony Evers is Democrat. No, Tony Evers is a Democrat. But this article says moving forward with the proposals, even though Democratic Governor Evers will almost certainly veto them. Again, that's bias right in the first. Back to the article. The proposals would allow people with concealed carry licenses to go armed on school grounds and in churches attached to private schools, lower the minimum age for obtaining a concealed carry license from 21 to 18, and allow anyone with a concealed carry license from any state to go armed in Wisconsin. Currently, only people with licenses from states that conduct background checks on applicants can carry concealed in Wisconsin. Assembly Democrats railed against the bills during a news conference before the floor session began, saying the measures would make the state more dangerous. Today, we vote on bills that will bring our guns to our school grounds, a bill that will allow high school seniors to carry concealed weapons, and a bill permitting people from out of state who would normally fail a criminal background. Listen to this. Who normally fail a criminal background check to carry guns in Wisconsin. As a parent, as a teacher, as a citizen, this is terrifying. Representative Deb Andraka, an elementary school teacher and volunteer for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense, a group that works to reduce gun violence. Here's the thing. Let's deconstruct that. Today we vote on bills that would bring guns to our school grounds, a bill that would allow high school seniors to carry concealed weapons, and a bill permitting people from out of state who would normally fail a criminal background check to carry guns in Wisconsin. That's not true. If they would normally fail a criminal background check, they wouldn't be legal to carry guns in Wisconsin. They would be prohibited from carrying guns in Wisconsin. But that's not what she says. Criminals would fail a background check, and they carry guns in Wisconsin. So it's just this math, and that's just the way that this article gets written to make it. What they could say is, and they could put this first, is these bills would protect parents from being felons, concealed carry license holding parents from being felons when they drive onto school grounds to park their vehicle. And again, it doesn't even allow guns on school grounds. It allows guns in vehicles on school grounds. So just, you know, massive spin in this article. But here's the thing. The assembly passed all four of these bills on voice votes, sending them to the Senate. Evers almost certainly will veto the bills if they reach his desk. I'm reading from the article again. Here's the thing. And then he goes on to say, Evers called a special session on gun control in 2019, only to see Republicans gavel in and gavel out within seconds. Meanwhile, gun violence continues to increase. The Milwaukee Homicide Review Commission tallied 857 non-fatal shootings. So then the story goes on to talk about all this crap that paints this in a bad light when it's completely irrelevant to these bills. These bills deal with concealed carry license holders. Concealed carry license holders aren't responsible for the homicides in Milwaukee, but that's what they're throwing into this bill. I always talk about homicides being up as if concealed carry license holders are the one committing homicide. They're not. But all that said, this is just total grandstanding by Republicans. Again, voice vote, so there's no one on record. If Republicans wanted to pass this bill, they could have done it in 2018 because we had constitutional carry to Scott Fitzgerald's desk, waiting for a vote in the Senate, which it never got. We had Wisconsin Carry put together the Free Families from Felonies Fits initiative, campaign, where we had those highway signs printed, yard signs printed, put them all over Scott Fitzgerald's district. Hey, Fitz, prevent parents from accidental felonies, or be pro-2A, protect parents from accidental felonies, past school grounds carry. You know, I think that was the gist of these bills or these signs that we had all over his district. Never got a vote. The word from Senator Craig, it was his bill, was that the Scott Walker and Robin Voss said, we don't need this. It's an election year. We don't need this. And it died. If Republicans wanted to pass these bills that they voice voted through last week, they could have done it in 2018. They didn't do it. The only reason they're doing it now is to make Robin Voss look like the anti-gun tyrant that he is. Robin Voss is to make Tony Evers look like the anti-gun tyrant that he is. And Tony Evers is an anti-gun tyrant. But the Republicans, mark my words, if the Republicans win the governorship, you will not see these bills move forward as fast as they did this year. So if Republicans have the governor's office, the assembly, and the Senate, you will not see these bills that just got fast-tracked through on a voice vote. You will not see these bills introduced again because all the Republicans are doing is grandstanding for gun owners, trying to make Tony Evers look. Here's the thing, and if they thought that Tony Evers would really sign these, they would never. If Tony Evers signed these, it would make people hate him less. It would make gun owners hate him less. And that is not the goal of the Republicans in Madison, to make you not hate Tony Evers as much. They want you to hate Tony Evers more. So the only reason the Republicans are moving these bills forward is because they're certain that Tony Evers will veto them and give them an election year issue. Yeah, they to go back and say to their Republican, gun-toting Republicans, oh, yeah, we tried to pass constitutional carry, and Evers vetoed it. That, again, when and they voice-voted this, so there's no record of who voted for it. So they can't – it's just – it's so clear political grandstanding by the Republicans. And so – and what I would say to every one of these guys, I'd say, do you – will you vow to every – and again, they voice voted, so you can't even say who voted for it and who didn't. But to every Republican, do you vow, introduce and vote for these bills as soon as a Republican governor is elected? And mark my words, they won't do it. Trust me, they won't do it. So yeah, that's the we talk about the problems with the establishment here. That should be what this. If you really want to talk about what matters to voters in Wisconsin, that should be it. In the Clefish-Nicholson race, who is going to advance freedom in Wisconsin? Because we had a whole bunch of freedom in Wisconsin that didn't get advanced when Scott Walker was governor. Act 10 was a great thing, but it was the one-trick pony, the one-shot wonder. It's scared. And that's the irony is Scott Walker, he writes a book called Unintimidated. Scott Walker was totally intimidated. There was supposed to be an Act 10 Part 2 that applied to police and fire. There was supposed to be, which were exempt from Act 10. And honestly, if that would have passed, we might not have had some of the problems with the police departments that we've had. When it comes to getting rid of bad cops, some people claim there's just, it's just a few bad apples. A couple people, I got to turn down my radio or my sound here. If it's just a couple bad cops making the rest of the cops look bad, the union protections have made it difficult to get rid of bad cops. Act 10, if it had applied to police and fire, would have remedied that. But Act 10 Part 2 never went through because Scott Walker was scared to the center by 100,000 angry teachers going to Madison. And he writes a book called Unintimidated when he was clearly intimidated. After Act 10, I'm telling you, Scott Walker had to be begged not to accept the Medicaid expansion. He had to be begged to be, he called right to work a distraction. He called, he shot down gun bills. When we had gun bills that were moving forward in 2018, he went on TV again and said that he likes Wisconsin's concealed carry law the way it is. So, Scott Walker, we had all kinds of conservative stuff we could have done. And we did get some conservative stuff in the second half of his first term and in his second term, but it was all championed by the legislature to the chagrin of Scott Walker and to the chagrin of Robin Voss. And I can prove it because when Andre Jacques moved forward the prevailing wage bill, he got punished by having his committee chairmanship pulled by Robin Voss. And then he turns around and leaves and goes to run for the Senate because didn't want to be in the assembly with Robin Voss's tyrannical ass lording over him. But next thing I was going to talk about tonight. So again, this Clefish race, Clefish-Nicholson race, if you want to talk about what really matters, if conservative talk radio, WISN, wants to talk about what really matters in the primary, we should be talking about the establishment. We should be talking about who can be more independent in Madison. We should be analyzing. And maybe Becky Clefish, she could impress me if she came out and said, Robin Voss is the reason that we don't have a lot of conservative stuff that we could have had. And start talking about while she was lieutenant governor, the things that she would want to see move forward that didn't. But I'm telling you, she can't do that. She can't come out and Clefish cannot come out and call out Robin Voss. Why would she do that? He's a supporter. Robin Voss is a supporter of Rebecca Clefish. The rest of us think Robin Voss is the problem. He's the reason we can't have conservative stuff. So this is the conversations that should be happening as we debate this primary. Will they be, or is the debate all going to be, well, Kevin Nicholson really wanted to run for Senate, which assumes facts, not in evidence, and I think isn't true. I think Kevin Nicholson was glad when Ron Johnson decided to run. Now, maybe Senate would have been an easier, certainly may have been an easier primary versus this is going to be a difficult primary with against Rebecca Clefish. But I do think if I honest to God, this is not because I'm a Nicholson supporter. I think Nicholson would rather be a governor than a senator. He'd rather be here in Wisconsin with his family and his kids than out in D.C. I think he really would have rather run just straight up, snap your fingers, what would you rather be? I think he would have rather run for, or rather be the governor. But, yeah, see, here's Scott in the chat says the people who keep reelecting Voss is the real problem here. It's more than that. The people, Voss is just an assemblyman. And his constituents, as idiots as they are, but it's the legislature. The legislature votes for who they want the Speaker of the Assembly to be. And they keep voting for the legislators from all across the state, the Republicans from all across the state, keep voting for this son of a bitch Voss to be the Speaker of the Assembly. That's the people who I'm more pissed at. And that tells you about this whole Republican establishment. Because, yeah, the constituents in Racine County where Robin Voss is, you know, I think they're idiots, but probably nobody primaries Robin Voss. It's probably going to be difficult. And people in his district know that he's the most powerful Republican in the state. But what I don't get is why Joe Sanfilippo. Of course, now I don't think Tim Rantham would be voting for Robin Voss, but all these other people keep voting for Robin Voss to be the Speaker of the Assembly. Because if he's not the Speaker of the Assembly, he's just another assembly person, like one of whatever, is there 99 assembly districts or something like that, or 92, 90. He's one of 90 assembly people. He's just one. And if we had someone, I'm trying to think who's a conservative, a real ball-busting conservative assembly rep. I'd have to think about that for a second because I really only know my own. And I forget, I think, I gotta think for a second of who's, because some of the people I'm thinking, like Steve Noss, I think is a senator, super conservative guy. I'd have to give it some thought. I'd have to give it some thought of who would be a good replacement for Robin Voss. But that's all it would take. Is the caucus to vote someone else to be the Speaker of the Assembly, a different Republican. And Robin Voss, boom. But that tells you what the problem is here in Wisconsin. It's the establishment. And the establishment gets bigger than Robin Voss, obviously, because Robin Voss needs the support of other people to keep his power, and somehow he's got it. I don't know if he's got dirt on these people or what, or if they're just all scared that if they're all up there so scared that they even mention to someone, hey, do you want to, you know, would you support someone else for Speaker of the Assembly, that just, it's too big of a risk because if it doesn't succeed, then Robin Voss is going to rain his tyranny down on you, pull your staffer, pull your committee assignments. So anyway, here's an observation I made the other day watching Court TV. I really like Court TV. Vinny Politan is the host of Court TV. Seems like a conservative guy. And when I say conservative, I don't mean like a true, like hardcore conservative, like you and I might be, but, example, I'm watching Court TV and I hear him. They're talking about a woman who was murdered by her ex-husband or something. And this is 6 months ago or something. Vinny Politan says, you know, these women, he goes, I got to tell you, you know, all these states have concealed carry laws. And these women who have an abusive spouse that they get a restraining order against, you need to go out, you need to get a concealed carry license, you need to buy a gun, because the restraining order is just a piece of paper. They said this on his national show, Court TV. And I thought, hell yeah, Vinny, that's the way. So I just, you know, he strikes me as someone that's, I won't call him a conservative, but he's got some conservative leanings, put it that way. So I like Vinny Politan. I think he calls it pretty straight up on Court TV with his comments. I've seen some stuff on Court TV that really ticked me off, like after the, you know, with the whole, After the election was stolen, then he comes on and talks about how there's no election fraud and Trump, but it kind of seemed like the network told him to say that, like he was ordered because they were doing the full saturation, every station, every network, every channel, you know, we're all going to come out and decry, you know, dismiss Trump's claims. But when it's just his standard show topics, he just strikes me as someone that leans a bit conservative. So I'm watching Court TV and they're having a discussion of the trial in Minnesota of the three cops in the George Floyd case. There was four cops, but Derek Chauvin's already been convicted. So there's three other cops and they're all charged in federal court of violating George Floyd's civil rights. I was trying to look up what the punishments are for these, like is life in prison, but I think the punishments are very, very severe. I think it could be life in prison or you know, huge amounts of time for these cops. Here's something that, again, you probably don't know unless you watch Court TV or really studied it. There's three other cops that are now charged with violating George Floyd's civil rights. Do you know that one of the cops that's now facing charges, federal charges for violating George Floyd's civil rights, was a rookie cop who was on his third shift? Guess who his training – so he was still under training. Guess who his training officer was? His training officer was Derek Chauvin, the guy who kneeled on George Floyd's neck slash back. So imagine that. You're hired to be a cop. It's your third shift. Like literally, you've been on the job 3 days. You go to a scene of a incident. Your training officer kneels on someone's neck, and you are now charged with a federal felony for violating George Floyd's civil rights. It just, so on Court TV, but you probably haven't heard that because they don't put that on the news. On Court TV, the host, Vinnie Politan, asked his panel, because he always has this panel come on, usually four people, and he says, does it make it different? He said, does it make it different for that one officer that he was a rookie and that his training officer was Derek Chauvin. So to expect him to do something, he would have essentially had to like tackle Derek Chauvin off of the subject. I mean, that's asking, you know, such a high bar for a rookie officer who's on his third shift, his third day of work. So Vinnie Politan poses this question to his panelists. He's usually got like two defense attorneys and two prosecutors from other all around the country that, you know, they kind of have their like little Zoom video, that Zoom video panel on Court TV. And the first three people on the panel, I think they were guys, said, yeah, it should make a difference. You know, I don't think it's right that he's charged with the same thing. He was a rookie. He's got no authority. There's a strong chain of command in the police department. It was his third shift, and his training officer is the one that's the perpetrator who's now convicted for the murder of George Floyd. They think it's different. But then they come to the fourth panelist, who's a black woman, and she says, oh, no, it's terrible. He should go to jail just like the rest of them. He sat there and did nothing. He should. And again, Vinnie Politan's like, well, but what would he, was he supposed to do? It's his third shift. He's, and his training officer is the one that's doing this. Would you? And this black woman was just all militant. No, it don't make no difference, blah, 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 blah. And you expect him to do what? Again, push his training officer off of George Floyd? I mean, come on. But that's when I came to a realization. And I thought to myself, how can this, like, I get it. The black woman on there, she's all George Floyd's God and the police are the devil, blah, blah, blah. But like, how could she not take a step back for a minute and realize, look, this, just put yourself in that officer's shoes. It's your third shift. How could you expect an officer on his third shift? It wasn't like Vinnie Politan was sitting there with a knife slitting someone's throat. And some people would say, well, no, he was kneeling on his throat. Not the same thing as, you know, if you see a cop doing something that's clearly corrupt, that'd be different. If you're a rookie cop and you see your training officer stealing drugs, I mean, you know that's wrong. But here they're just detaining a subject, and you're a rookie. They're probably saying to the rookie, you know, the rookie's probably heard, oh yeah, these, when we go to arrest people, they fake sicknesses all the time. They fake that they can't, and they do. That's true. People say all the time, oh, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. Oh, you're hurting me, you're hurting me. My arm, you know, I got a bad shoulder. You can't put my hands behind my back to handcuff me like that. I mean, they deal with that crap every day from people that they're arresting. But anyway, so this one panelist on Court TV, she wouldn't entertain anything. Just, nope, not even a second thought that one officer who was a rookie, it was his third shift, 28-year-old rookie on his third shift, and that Derek Chauvin was his training officer, that he's just as culpable as everybody else. And, you know, and it was funny because Vinny Politan, after this black lady on his panel goes off in that rant, he's kind of makes the comment. He's like, well, I guess, you know, that's why we have people on for different perspectives. But he was kind of like, thought that his panelist there was being a bit ridiculous. But I came to this realization about liberals is that, this black woman, she couldn't even put herself in the shoes of this officer as a rookie on his third shift. What was he supposed to do? Nope. Her cause, George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. That's it. George Floyd or bust. Black Lives Matter or bust. Couldn't even take the time to just give it some thought, some rational thought. Giving the example of me, like, I'm a pro-gun guy, but if I see a concealed carry license holder, if liberals never – well, let me make the point first. I came to this realization that liberals will sacrifice individuals for their political ends. Even innocent individuals, liberals will sacrifice for their political ends. Look at Kyle Rittenhouse. That kid was innocent, and there was video to prove it from day one or day two. Day one's the day it happened. Day two. From day two, there was video showing Kyle Rittenhouse was innocent as innocent could be. Innocent kid / young man. The liberals were willing to ruin his life for the political issue. Because if liberals were really about justice, they would say, look, this kid was innocent. It was self-defense. But for liberals, the political cause comes above any individual's whatever. They were going to sacrifice Kyle Rittenhouse's life, ruin his life, put him to jail for the rest of his life because the political issue was more important to them, that Black Lives Matter rioters be allowed to do their rioting without fear of those damn law-abiding citizens putting a stop to it if they attack the law-abiding citizen. This cop in Minnesota ruined his life for the political issue. They don't care about his individual culpability or lack of it, but they will ruin his life because the political issue is George Floyd, Black Lives Matter. I mean, systemically racist country. Coronavirus. Democrats are willing to let millions of innocent people die, prevent millions from obtaining treatments, early treatments that could save them, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. Liberals just don't care about individuals on any level. The political cause is always bigger, and that's really scary. So the comparative example I would use is, look, I'm pro-gun. Think of if I or conservatives had that same mindset that liberals do, your cause above all else, then let's say we have a person who uses their gun, they're a concealed carry license holder, and they use their gun in an unlawful manner. If Republicans were as bullheaded and political issue first versus individual accountability, we would support every concealed carry license holder no matter what they do with their gun because we support concealed carry. So anything a concealed carry license holder does, we automatically support, whether they killed an innocent person, maybe they, you know, shot recklessly trying to stop a purse snatching and killed hit a kid. You know, I'm just trying to think of something. Maybe they someone was trying to break into their car and ran away, and they shot him in the back as the person ran away. Clearly illegal. But if conservatives were as damn it all, we're going to support our side, like liberals are, we'd sit there and say, oh no, that's you know, self-defense shouldn't be breaking into car. I mean, I hope you see in the point I'm trying to make. But the point that I'm trying to make is that liberals are so committed to their political cause that damn the facts, damn the rights, and damn even an individual who's innocent, if the political angle becomes to the benefit of their political issue, they would sacrifice an innocent person. They would have sacrificed an innocent person, Kyle Rittenhouse. And there was, go back to Court TV, they would interview people on Court TV who, even to the end, after all the evidence, when everybody else was saying, yeah, this is like cut and dry self-defense. We never saw all these videos on the news. And the news never showed the videos because the news didn't. The news didn't show the videos of them swinging a skateboard at his head. They cut that part out. So it wasn't until the trial that a lot of people, even libs, saw what really happened. And when they did, a lot of, like, you know, your objective, like not your hardcore liberals, but your objective, rational, independent kind of people said, oh yeah, it's clearly self-defense, but not the hardcore libs. The hardcore libs, even after seeing clear self-defense, they're so committed to the Black Lives Matter movement, to the, you know, the benefit of these riots and protests to what they perceive as their political cause, that they were against Kyle Rittenhouse, even though he was innocent, even though he didn't shoot anybody that was black, even though the person that he shot was sounded like a racist to me, that well, now I forget the names of them. It's only been a couple months and I forget the Grosskreutz. Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum was the first person he shot. Rosenbaum sounded like a pretty strong racist to me when you hear some of the things he said. But nope, the libs, they'll sacrifice an innocent life for their political cause. So anyway, what else do I have here tonight? I think I covered almost everything. Here's a real, you know, California, which couldn't be more of a joke. Just when you think they couldn't do anything more nonsensical and absurd, they went up themselves. So there's now San Jose. I don't know if you saw this. I post this on the Wisconsin Carry MeWe group. But San Jose has recently approved the first insurance law for gun owners. And I'm reading this off of KCRA.com in California. San Jose, California. California City voted Tuesday, this last Tuesday night, to require gun owners to carry liability insurance in what's believed to be the first measure of its kind in the United States. The San Jose City Council overwhelmingly approved the measure despite opposition from some gun owners who said it would violate their Second Amendment rights. The council also voted to require thousands of gun owners in the city to pay a small fee, which would be used for firearm safety education and services such as domestic violence prevention and mental health services. The proposal aims at reducing gun violence in the San Francisco Bay Area. I mean, proposals aimed at reducing gun violence in San Francisco area. Criminals commit gun violence. No criminal is going to go buy liability insurance. Only the law-abiding are going to be affected by this. But here's the other thing. As you watch, there's going to be Republicans who are going to peel off and support stuff like this, these insurance requirements law. I mean, it's this couldn't be a more nonsense law. You know, the law-abiding gun owners who buy guns for self-defense, now they have to pay a fee. The criminals who are committing all these crimes, they don't have to pay a fee. They don't register their guns. They don't register, you know, they're not buying liability insurance. And I can guarantee that when they catch a criminal in California with a gun who doesn't have the liability insurance, they won't charge him with that. Why? Because they're going to feel sorry for them. They're not even going to put him in jail. The big problem we have right now with all these repeat criminals, they drop the gun charges. They use the streets as a jail. If they really wanted to come down on gun violence, they would come down on the violent people. So it's just, I mean, this is, this insurance, liability insurance requirement, it's nothing more than a tax. It's, and these council members have to know it. It's just a political ploy, nothing more than a tax, only going to affect the law-abiding, have zero effect on the criminal element, zero effect on gun violence, zero effect on anything that they're using to sell this. It's just a deterrent to gun ownership. And don't get me wrong. Don't think that they think, don't think that these city council members think that this was actually going to reduce gun violence. They're not that stupid. As I've said before, and you can take this to the bank, trust me, the Democrats, the people that they're most afraid of aren't the criminals, it's you. Because to the Democrats, gun owners like me and you, we're the insurrection. We're the next January 6th to them. The criminals, they're already in the system. They commit crimes all the time. And if a criminal ever does something that's so bad that they want to get them off the streets, then they can. They just go to the judge and make a big political deal out of it in the news. And they'll finally get a sentence that'll send them to jail for a while. But so the politicians already have all the control they need over the criminals. But the politicians don't have the control that they need over you and over me. And that's what this is about. Make no mistake about it. These council members aren't stupid. They don't think that this is going to reduce gun violence. They know that these liability insurance requirements will suppress gun ownership, suppress, I mean, in San Jose, you probably can't carry a gun. Parts of California, you can get concealed carry licenses. But then I guess, yeah, I that's got to be, I know that San Jose, probably their county doesn't issue them. I don't know how it works in California. I'm going to be honest, I don't know California guns. I know in some counties in California, they're pretty liberal giving out concealed carry permits, and some they're not. But that's what this is about. This insurance requirement is just going to be something that law-abiding citizens say, hey, I don't want to pay liability insurance, so I'm not going to get a gun because, you know, it's going to serve the purpose that the city council wants of chilling lawful gun ownership in their community. And that's what they want. So we sit here and we try to argue this in a way that says, look, it's not going to reduce gun violence. And we're arguing against the wind because they know it's not going to reduce gun violence. They really just want to chill the rights carry. So anyway, that's the show. A good number of guys in tonight. Thanks for tuning in, you guys. Lon from Wausau, thanks for coming in. Scott and Bringing It Boy from California, great to have you guys. Tom from Lake Geneva. You guys have a great week. Carry on. Be well armed.
This is Sniper Chick Julie. You've been listening to Well Armed Radio, and I have to know, is that a gun in your pants, or did you just really enjoy the show?
Stop listening to the bombastic loudmouths on the radio and television and the internet. To hell with them.